Welcome to Torat Imecha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Amy Horowitz, and this week we'll be learning Parshas Pinchas. Parshas Pinchas begins with a census, which, if we recall from the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, is the second census in our Sefer. Unlike the first census, whose purpose we questioned, the census in our Parsha is well-timed, because so much has happened to the Jewish people in the Midbar since that first accounting. So many punishments have ensued since they left Har Sinai, and a whole new generation now prepares to enter the land of Israel and battle for its conquest, so it's time to take stock of our numbers. Following the census, we meet the five Benot Tzlafchad, who present themselves to Moshe and ask to inherit their father's portion of the land of Israel. Our Mefarshim question their motivation. Since at the time women didn't inherit land, what made these sisters think they had a valid claim? If we read the Psukim carefully, we can understand a little about their motivation and why they felt they had a good argument for inheriting their father's land. They begin by saying, Avinu meit bamidbar, our father died in the desert. By this, they mean that their father was promised a portion of the land of Israel along with all other members of his generation. After Chet HaMeraglim, the original generation was punished, and they died out before entering the land to receive their promised portion. That meant that the promise would only be fulfilled through their sons. But Tzlafchad didn't have any sons, so his promised portion of land would be an empty, unfulfilled promise. Based on this understanding, the daughters of Tzlafchad are not arguing for equal rights for themselves, but for equal rights for their father. That's why they ask for land, betoch achei avinu, not amongst their cousins, but amongst their uncles. They're lobbying on their father's behalf, not on their own. Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch makes an interesting suggestion. In the census conducted just prior to the Benot Tzlafchad's request, the families of the tribe of Menashe, Tzlafchad's tribe, are divided into sons, grandsons, and even great-grandsons. It seems that the tribe of Menashe was particularly focused on family legacy. And when Tzlafchad's daughters hear their uncle's names mentioned but not their father's name, they realize that their father's family name and legacy stands to be lost. To them, that's even more important than land. And if what they're asking for is to salvage the continuity and legacy of their family name, then their request isn't even that radical. We have precedent in the Torah for women taking it upon themselves to ensure the continuity of their families. A perfect example would be Tamar, who risks her reputation and plans an undercover scheme to initiate Yibum with Yehuda to ensure that her dead husband's legacy continues. Rashi takes a different approach to the Benot Tzlafchad's request. He suggests that these daughters had a deep love for the land of Israel, which is why the Torah relates their lineage all the way back to Yosef, who insists that his bones be carried back to Israel to be buried in the land that he loved. The idea that their love for the land of Israel was in their DNA is certainly beautiful, and the possibility that it prompted their unusual request for their father's portion of land is compelling, but where does Rashi get it from? When the Benot Tzlafchad present their case to Moshe, they make sure to tell him that their father Tzlafchad was not part of Korach's assembly. The Gemara in Bava Basra relates that Korach and his followers did not merit an inheritance in the land of Israel, so it was important to Tzlafchad's daughters to verify that this exclusion did not apply to their father. However, they tell Moshe, ki bechet o meit, that their father died because of a different sin. Rashi quotes two opinions as to what his sin might have been. Rabbi Akiva suggests that Tzlafchad was the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the person who sinned earlier in Sefer Bamidbar by gathering wood on Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon suggests that Tzlafchad was one of the Ma'apilim, one of the group of men who tried to enter Eretz Yisrael after the sin of the Meraglim, when Hashem had decreed that the Jews would now have to wait to enter the land. Rashi seems to be identifying with Rabbi Shimon's opinion that the Benot Tzlafchad inherited their love of the land of Israel from their father, who sacrificed his life to demonstrate his own love of the land. So Tzlafchad also had this deep love for the land of Israel coursing through his veins, inherited from Yosef, and passed on to his daughters, both in their spiritual DNA and by his example. The possibility that the Benot Tzlafchad were motivated by their great love for Eretz Yisrael seems to work nicely in our Parsha. Right before they're mentioned, at the end of the census, the Torah tells us that no one from the previous generation would be entering the land of Israel, with a few notable exceptions. The Kli Yakar reads that pasuk very carefully, noting that the Torah tells us, Lo haya ish mipikudei Moshe ve'Aaron ha-Kohen, There was no man from the previous generation that was still alive, but there were women from the original generation that were still alive, and they would be entering the land of Israel. The Kliyakar explains that although the men of the generation that left Egypt struggled with their feelings about the land of Israel, the women never did. It was the men who complained, the men who suggested that they turn back towards Egypt. The women, however, were the Nashim Tzadkaniyos who left Egypt, and they appreciated the holiness that the land of Israel offered. So not only did the Benot Tzlafchad inherit their love of Israel from their father and their great-great-great-great-grandfather, but they were part of a community of righteous women who held the land of Israel in great esteem. This is why, explains the Netziv, the Benot Tzlafchad ask for land betoch achei avinu, because they're from the tribe of Menasheh, which split its portion between land inside the boundaries of Israel and land outside the boundaries in the Eiver HaYarden. They want to make sure they're inheriting a portion inside the land, even though it hadn't been conquered yet, and they were passing up the certainty of land in the Eiver HaYarden. Perhaps this is why their argument resonates with Hashem. There has been so much uncertainty about the land of Israel over the past 40 years in the Midbar, from the rose-colored recollections about the land of Egypt to the fear-mongering of the Meraglim and the failed attempt of the Ma'apilim, that this expression of love for the land is music to Hashem's ears. The Medrash uses a kind of time warp and suggests that the Benot Tzlafchad speak up for Israel at the same moment that the Jews are asking to turn around and head back to Egypt. The chronology is off, but the concept holds true. The Medrash is suggesting that the Benot Tzlafchad demand their portion of the land of Israel at a time when so many of their fellow Jews were uncertain about entering the land. The Medrash praises the Benot Tzlafchad using the famous words of the Mishnah, "B'makom she'ein anashim hishtadel lihiyot ish," where there are no men, strive to be a man. In other words, true leadership means standing up for your values even when they are unpopular. Aviva Zornberg points out that the Benot Tzlafchad's petition is revolutionary for another reason. She explains that in a sefer that focuses on acts of speech, like the complaints of the people, Miriam's Lashon Hara, the spies' report, Korach's argument, Moshe's failure to speak to the rock, and Bilam's curses turned blessings, the Benot Tzlafchad demonstrate an act of speech that Hashem is finally happy with. This is evident from Hashem's response to their request. Kain Benot Tzlafchad dovrot. Kain, yes, says Hashem, I like what they're saying. Fascinatingly, the word Vayedaber has been missing from the psukim since way back in Parshat Shlach, since the Ched HaMeraglim, and has been replaced by the word Vayomer. For the better part of 39 years in the wilderness, the people's speech has been used to cast dispersions, to cast doubt, and to cast everything in a negative light. The Gemara in Bava Basra records that at the moment of God's acceptance of Benot Tzlafchad's speech, Dibur returns after an almost 39-year hiatus. The Benot Tzlafchad have used their speech to transform negativity into positivity, to uplift, and Hashem is now ready to respond by once again speaking Vayedaber to Moshe. Interestingly, the Benot Tzlafchad's request is almost as audacious as Korach's. They demand their father's portion, saying, Tena lanu achuza, give us a portion of the land. And in the all-male society that has just been counted, just the fact of their petition is exceedingly bold. But their challenge is embraced by Hashem and turned into law, whereas Korach's is obviously rejected. They also use a familiar phrase, Lama yigara shem avinu mitoch mishpachto. Their question, Lama yigra, why should our father miss out, is reminiscent of the question of the members of the Chevra Kedisha, who petitioned Moshe earlier in the Sefer for a second chance to bring the Korban Pesach. They said, Lama nigra, why should we miss out? Their petition was also embraced by Hashem, and there too the law was changed. What the stories of the Benot Tzlafchad and the Chevra Kedisha have in common is their motivation. They made their requests for the right reasons, out of love. The Chevra Kedisha petitioned out of love for doing a mitzvah, and the Benot Tzlafchad petitioned out of love for the land of Israel. In both cases, the purity of their motivation was clear, and it was enough to not only grant their request, but to change the law in their merit. Korach's petition was self-serving, as were the complaints of the mitonanim and those who demanded meat. In those cases, the selfishness of their motivation was obvious as well, and their requests were not accepted. This parsha seems to be teaching us the difference between speaking up and speaking out. Speaking out is when you have a self-serving agenda, when you just want to hear the sound of your own voice, and when you're just trying to stir the pot. This is what the Mitonanim did earlier in our Sefer, lodging a complaint that was Ra be'oznei Hashem. Rashi explains that although most bad behavior is described as Ra be'enei Hashem, bad in Hashem's eyes, the complaints of the Mitonanim are bad in Hashem's ears because the people were complaining about absolutely nothing, but just wanted to stir the pot and be heard by Hashem in order to make him mad. In contrast, speaking up is when you're fighting for a worthy cause and hoping to make a real difference, not just for yourself, but for others who follow. That's why the Chevra Kedisha and the Benot Slavchad make petitions that change the law, because the requests are not made to satisfy a personal need for instant gratification, but instead are made out of love for their cause, a love which impacts not only themselves, but those who follow. This nuance is sometimes hard to determine, but seems to make all the difference. Those who speak out in our Sefer are punished, while those who speak up are rewarded. The title of our Sefer, Bamidbar, is related to the word midaber, speech. During a period of our history when we repeatedly spoke out, the Benot Slavchad spoke up and led by example. We too have the power to lead by example, using our speech to transform negativity into positivity for ourselves and for others who follow. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and thank you for learning Parshas Pinchas with the OU Women's Initiative.